You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. Goodness me, David. I was looking forward to this weekend for all sorts of reasons. I was slightly interested in the Wimbledon finals, the women's and the men's, more the men's really, because I didn't know who the women were. And then suddenly, all these other things transpired. Well, obviously we had the Euros, which we'll talk about later, but the Trump shooting, the assassination attempt, it really grabbed my attention for all sorts of different reasons. And I just hope the politicization of an attempted assassination does not continue. And I hope that Trump doesn't grab this at the Republican convention, which starts in a few hours' time. I hope he doesn't grab it and say, this is good for me. It is good for him from the polling point of view, but he mustn't make hay out of it, I don't think. What do you think?
I hope you're right, because initially when I saw it, you know, there was one of, just totally astonished and also shocked. You know, when you actually see him flicking his ear and you can hear the shots. And this is live. I mean, I didn't watch it live, but they had been filming it. So, I mean, it was as good as live, and you see the whole situation. Initially I just feared what was going to happen after that. You know, I just feared that there was going to be the uncertainty that we saw at 9/11. Well, you remember when that plane flew into the building?
I do.
You know, all those kind of reactions. Admittedly, this was from within. We didn't know who it was that was shooting. And so it did leave me shocked. I thought, oh, no, you know, markets are going to fall apart. This is going to go on for a long time. I didn't know how it was going to unfold. The last thing I thought was what we're seeing now is that the U.S. markets are actually going better, picking up, simply because they believe Trump's going to come in a landslide, or not a landslide, but easily, and of course his economic policies will help the market. I'm still very confused and trying to get my thoughts clear. To be honest, I wish there was an end to all of this, you know, to the Trump-type politics. I just want, as I'm saying, Norman Rockwell-type situation, blackberry pie, what do they call it, pumpkin pie, you know, on the shelf, and little kids stealing the pie off the, while it cools in the kitchen. Those kind of situations, roast chicken on Sunday or whatever. I just wish there was a little bit of sanity that came in. So I don't know how you responded. I know the markets at the moment, are pumped up, and it's becoming headlines all over as they investigate how this could have happened, who, what the motives were. But I can't help thinking that it's Trump's politics that are really almost behind this kind of violence. You know, he's defiant. He's
pissed. You saw him, yeah. When he was grabbed by the Secret Service. And he was very defiant, and he pumped the air, obviously, again, saying to himself, I've been shot, but I'm not dead, and I'm going to use this in order to boost my popularity. Yeah. And he was shouting, fight, fight. What are you fighting? What are you fighting against? And I saw Nigel Farage, the ghastly British man, English man, who's the head of Reform UK, who's a friend of Trump's and has campaigned on Trump's behalf. He said on live on a Sunday morning political program called Sunday with Laura Kunzberg on BBC One, he said, this is because of the extreme rhetoric of the far-left liberal fraternity. He blamed the far-left on the fact that Donald Trump was shot. No, it's nothing to do with that. This chap was a Republican, this young fellow that shot him, who is now dead himself. It's because of Trump being so unreasonable and so nasty, so horrible, and constantly spewing lies that caused the demise of his right ear, for goodness sake. It's so obvious, but there is so much hatred in America, David.
That's my point. You know, and I think a lot of it has come with Trump. I don't even know if Obama in those eras we had anything like this when Bush, when Bush was in power, and that it's only since we've seen Trump, you know, make America great. I think there was a similar story that came out of J.D. Vance, you know, who is likely to be his vice president. Yeah. And it had only happened. No one knew the background. No one knew any facts about this. What did he do? He came out blaming the Democrats and Biden for Biden's rhetoric. And I said, you know what? You're going to be vice president. You're the last person on earth I want to be in power or have any power. The same other woman, I never remember her name, who wears red, and she's an absolute nutter of note.
She's from the south, I think. I can't remember her, but yeah.
And it also came out screaming and blaming, you know, without knowing anything. And that's the worst kind of thing you can have. You know, that's the kind of politics you want to get rid of. Say, we don't know who it is. You know, I at the end of the day, it's probably one young crank who wanted to get his, you know, who wanted immortality by being the man who shot Trump. You know, obviously his intention was to kill him, but that's what he wanted. The same chaps who assassinated John Lennon and, you know, attempt on Reagan's life and so on. They do it alone. I don't think there's any kind of conspiracy or anything. They just nutters. And the fact that they had a rifle, an automatic rifle, which you could have bought in where, I don't know, in Walmart or some store and something like that, you know, which is all part of the Republicans' you know, policy that you should be allowed to protect yourself or defend yourself. I mean, honestly, that's why I'm saying as I sit back, I'm not a Biden fan, and I've been one who's been calling for him to stand down. But I must admit, when he spoke, I felt a little bit of comfort to say, listen, I'd rather he was there. I'd rather listen to him than to Mr. Trump. So, yeah, different emotions from all of us. You know, I think we're all going to have different emotions about this.
Yeah, quite right. But I do think that what this has done is cemented, firstly, it cemented Trump's nomination as leader of the Republican Party, but also it's almost guaranteed him immortality when it comes to voters. And there will be people who were. There was one chap who was just so vitriolic. You caught him on the right side of the camera when Trump was being taken off, and he was having a go at the camera people and screaming obscenities at them. This is the sort of emotion that Trump and his rhetoric engenders amongst his support base. And because I get upset about this. It's a culture of hatred, as I've said. Horrible.
No. It is very scary to be in their climate. And you know what it's like? It's like going to West Ham and sitting amongst their supporters and shouting for for Man City to score something like that. You know, you're not going to last long.
Why did you single out West Ham, by the way? I went to a Millwall versus Ipswich game about in the 1980s. I've never been so scared in all my life. There's only 10,000-15,000 people at this game, and I stood at the Millwall end, and I started to jump a little bit when Ipswich scored, and gosh, I feared for my life. But anyway, we're talking football far too early. The market seems to have responded quite nicely, and I don't know if that has anything to do with the fact that Trump will be someone who feathers his own nest by cutting interest rates and that sort of thing, and removing regulation from the type of industry that he's apparently involved in. But markets say, oh, that's great. He will be good for the markets. He may not be good for America. Yeah. He may not be good for the world, but he'll be good for Wall Street, David.
Exactly right. You know, this is the Trump trade. You know, that's taxes will be lowered, you know, tariffs imposed. Oil is the big story. You know, he's not going to restrict the production of oil. America's an oil-producing country. Therefore, you're finding some of the renewable companies coming under pressure. So that is the Trump trade. I think the left liberals, those that Farage can't stand anything they do, this is going to be a revenge government. You know, that's the kind of government it's going to be. Retribution, you know, for all those who criticized him or stood against him, whatever it is. That's why I'm saying, hold on a sec. I'm getting into, you know, I'm becoming an old man. I'm saying, I don't want to end my life under a Trump presidency. not in my life, you know. I say, I just want to live in peace.
You don't want to wake up on a negative every single morning. And I do. When I turn the news on and I see people like Farage and Trump and the right wing in Europe, I say, this is just pure nastiness. Just stop it. Get on with it. Be nice to each other, for goodness. I know it sounds very liberal and hippie, but it's how it should be.
No, I'm with you. That's what a government should be, just to create an environment for business to prosper, not to be so far apart. I know that there's always issues in the world, whether it's free education, medicine prices are too much. There are always those kind of things, how much social grants but those can be done on negotiation. They've been there for a long time. It's quite intriguing. I'm reading a book on Churchill, the very early days. This goes into every speech that he makes. You can only read it in very small doses. But I mean, when you read politics in those days, it was, it wasn't anywhere close to this. People hated each other, but at least they debated at Westminster, they debated in Parliament. They didn't take knives out and try to stab each other. And they were clever. The debates in Parliament were clever, they spoke well and sure. But there were a lot of issues. But this is just pure, horrible anger and bitterness. And when I look at these, as you say, when you look at the people who actually attended the rallies and go there, you just say, okay, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I should be around here. I'm not sure what I should say.
I sent out a message to our little group that we've got with yourself and Viv Govender, and I said we were just a few centimetres away from civil war. In other words, if that bullet had hit his head and he had been assassinated, America would have gone into some kind of civil war, a mass civil unrest, and that might have spread to the rest of the world as well. I know right-wingers rising up against the liberal left. So it's actually very good in some ways that he wasn't shot dead.
No. You're right. It would have been, it would have been a different world now. Mm. I think what it does expose, I think America's very weak at the moment. This divided leadership, the two extremes, left and right, I don't think it, makes it a strong nation. For me, it's not the kind of nation you want to lead the world. I've always looked up to America. I've always looked up to them. To maintain, I know the police. We refer to them as the policemen of the world. You want them to set a kind of moral standard, certainly set the moral compass. I just don't feel they're there. I don't even know who we can look to anymore. That's when you say you wake up in the morning and you're not quite sure where you are, which planet you're in. And I just want to get on with life. You don't have to wake up to these kind of crises every day.
No, you don't. Anyway, markets, David, here we are. On July the 15th, nothing happening in South Africa, of course. I think we've got the MPC this week, which I don't know. I don't want to be dismissive of it, but it's largely inconsequential as far as I can make out. It's what's going on overseas that is the most important thing. There's not much going on the Stock Exchange News Service at the moment. I think people will be coming back in the next couple of weeks and results and trading updates will start coming out, but nothing at the moment. Are you picking up anything that I'm missing?
Yeah, funny enough, just something that caught me by surprise, and I have to refer to the company that I work for, Sasfin.
I saw that,
finally taking themselves off the market. Look, they've been around for a long time, never really grown. Come under quite a bit of pressure recently. I don't know, probably 80% owned. There's a very small float. It's not a big business, but they are coming, they are going to buy themselves out at a fairly premium, take the company off the market, which I think for a small business is probably makes sense. The other one was Bell Equipment as well, also buying themselves out, going private as well.
So that's two less companies on the JSE is what you're saying. Another shrinking universe situation.
Yeah. Yes. So little businesses, they're not going to move the needle much. I don't think there's between them, there's only a couple of billion. But you know, interesting that little businesses don't find, and I, you know, it's the underlying economy that's just is not lending itself to building the stock exchange. You know, it's I know we blame the stock exchange, but I think you have to look at the economy as well. You know, in Bell's case, they haven't been recognized. There's no value. You know, they obviously they're buying themselves at a premium. They wouldn't do that if they felt that they were worth what the market thought. But there's no fixed investment here. You know, it's dead. There is nothing happening of a major nation. So a company who makes equipment is not going to survive, as nor, you know, nor are our construction businesses. You've seen it with Marion Roberts, Wilson Bailey, you name them. You know, there's just nothing happening.
Have you ever invested in Bell Equipment? Have you ever bought a share or sold a share in Bell Equipment? No.
Not me personally, no. No,
and I've been in the business for more than 50 years.
Yeah. I've not, you know, it's not, I've watched it carefully. As I say to you, I like to go through all the SENS announcements on a day-to-day basis and try to pick up what the mood is, what's happening. And I know that they've attempted to buy themselves out once at a very cheeky price. This seems to be much closer to a deal which the market will accept. So I'll go into it in greater detail. But it's a kind of trend. You know, the companies prefer to be private. They prefer to run it without all the regulation and that they have to go
through. It's cheaper as well. It's much cheaper not to be on the stock exchange, as you well know.
Yeah, especially if you're not getting the benefits of it.
Mm.
You know, if you look in Pick and Pay's case, they need the stock exchange. They needed to have a rights issue. They needed to go to their shareholders to raise $4 billion. You know, they couldn't have done that. It would have been too expensive outside. But I think in some of these smaller businesses, it's quite sad.
It is. And just so from your company's point of view, it just says proposed delisting of Sasfin Holdings pursuant to an offer by Sasfin Wealth to Sasfin Holdings ordinary shareholders funded by subscriptions for shares in Sasfin Wealth by Unitas and Whipfin and cautionary announcement. That was the announcement that came out at 2:15 this afternoon. But long and the short of it is it's going private. It's being removed from the exchange. That doesn't affect you too much, does it?
No, not at all. No.
Good.
No, not at all. No, I'm totally out of it. I just, you know, I was at a meeting and I came back here and I saw a SENS announcement and I saw all these presentations, and so a bit of a surprise for me. I'm not against it. I think they are making the right decision by going off. You know, they've got no value for being on the market. So yeah, I've got to go through it in detail and, you know, whatever. So good for them. I think I don't know what this means down the line for the bank. They've had a bit of a rough time now with the issues that happened in their the Forex department. So, you know, they've got the case overhanging from SARS, and these things just don't go away and takes a long time. And it's weighed on their ability, you know, on everyone's ability and also on the mood. So hopefully we can remove ourselves from the market and management can get on and start refocusing the business.
Good. That's a positive spin on it. Yeah, very good. So two companies leaving the JSE in the next few weeks or months. Yeah. What will be next? I don't know. I'm just looking at the market now and just thinking, well, you know what? You're quite right. The path that you've gone on, in other words, focusing mainly on the really big companies in the United States or America, and to a certain extent Europe, with companies like ASML, for example, in the Netherlands. You've done exactly right. It doesn't matter what people say. It's like people saying, well, you should stick with Gareth Southgate when it comes to football. I say, no, you shouldn't. he's never won anything.
No, they were terrible.
He's boring. We'll talk about that in a moment. But you see, your policy towards investment has been vindicated when I look at the JSE, and I'm not being nasty about the JSE. I'm just saying it's an underperformer. It's the England of the world stock exchanges.
I'm doing a presentation tomorrow. It's internal, or it's to clients. It's a webinar, and I do this all the time. But I was looking, and I always go back. I say 10 years ago, if you were to put money into the JSE, 10 years ago, if you put $100 in, today it's worth $94 after 10 years. I'm not – look, admittedly, I'm not using total return, so there's dividends. It might have you know, they might have, you know, made the picture a little rosier. They're, funny enough, in the UK, it's the same thing. And the UK and the U and the JSE are very much the same in construction, you know, financials, as a few financials, as well as the mining stocks, oil stocks, and so on. So if you go to the S&P and the NASDAQ, you're going to find that $100 will be worth, I don't know, $234.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of gains, you know, and to a large extent, those are the, it's because of the, you know, the tech shares on the S&P and on the NASDAQ that have given you your wealth. And, you know, that story, I think, is going to persist. So, Lindsay, the big argument, you know, is do you go broad? We talk about very broad-based, you know, you've got to diversify. And I'm saying, look, I diversify in certain themes, you know, and I stick to certain themes, and I still think they're going to persist for the next few years. I don't think AI is going anywhere. You know, you heard Viv. Viv said he's 32% yes. in dollar terms in his AI fund. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah,
it's a that's big, a phenomenal return.
Yeah. Yeah, in the last 10 years, you've gone minus 6% in dollar terms on, yes. on the JSE. So minus 6 yeah. against 32% in the last year, for goodness sake. It's yeah. not difficult yeah. to work out. It's really not difficult.
No.
These value stock managers will have their day in the sun. And but then if you go back and say, well, actually, if you'd have put your money here instead of in a South African bank, for example, you would have made this. But, you know, you've got to be nice about them. They're good chaps and they have a conviction. Anyway, go
you
on.
Know, I, you know what? You've got to put the ball in the back of the net. I don't care how you do it. It bounces off the back of your head, whatever it is. And I respect that. You know, you can't. And what I'm trying to say is, I don't care how you made it. You know, I don't care if you got it right and you got it right for a long time and you're making lots of money. Well, you know, why have you got to criticize it? Hello, those chaps are buying. You know, they're doing well. Mm-hmm. And I come back to the argument now. The big argument is NVIDIA at the moment. I still like the story. The more I read about it, the more I'm saying, hold on, this is not over yet. You know, I don't have to panic yet. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to have my last drink and go home. I can still party a little more. You know, I know that this is, you know what I'm saying? I know it's going to come to an end, but not yet. So we still got to see the results. So the more that I read about it, and I'm not talking about, you know, comment. I'm talking about research and people who are understanding what is happening there. You know, the more comfortable I feel to stay around. And, you know, okay, I'm going to hang around. And it keeps going higher. It's under a little bit of pressure today, you know, down 0.5%. But I mean, it's up 160% on the year. I can live with that.
I know. One day you'll know when the turn has come and it'll fall 20%.
That's exactly.
But even if it falls 20%, you'll still have a handsome profit if you look at it over a two-year period, which is probably how long you've been in the stock. So
that's my point. That's the exact point, you know. So, yeah, I and the stories go on. You know, Lindsay, I'm not one of these. I don't read 12 hours a day. I read, you know, I love to get up early in the morning and I'll go read the Financial Times or the, you know, Wall Street Journal or Bloomberg's and everything. And you get a feel for what's happening. You see what's featured in that. And, you know, I form my views around that. You know, that's where I form my views on the weight loss drugs. You know, I keep reading and the more I read it's, the more positive it is. I say, why must I get rid of them? You know, why? I don't have to pull out now. It's just starting to gather momentum. So I think that's, you know, it's against that background that I hold on. And as I've said, if you want to get out, I promise you, I press a button and our clients are out.
That's it.
You know, we're in liquid stocks. We're out. I can get out in the next hour. You know, literally takes a few minutes.
Doesn't take. So, it takes a lot longer to get out of Sasfin, and I'm not singling out this stock.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of time to get out of Bell Equipment if you've got a 5% holding, for example. It takes a lot of time and a lot of patience and a lot of pain in order to do so if they were still on the stock market, which they won't be soon. But anyway, it is very interesting. David, the S&P close to 5,700, the futures market, it's quite extraordinary. I mean, it's okay. It's not quite as ebullient as it has been, but that's because it's summertime. But it keeps on just going up and going up, and long may it continue. Now then, let's talk about sport if we can, because, you know, I'm English, so I understand what it's like to support English teams. We've had a couple of good seasons and a couple of good years when it comes to Test cricket and even T20 cricket. Just a little bit of hope occasionally with the rugby team. They nearly beat the All Blacks on Saturday.
I watched that.
Very close to beating them, and I was quite proud of them for doing that.
They were very good.
Then you had the Springboks against Ireland with that last gasp drop kick from the Irish. And incidentally, somebody said to me, and this is not my view, she's a mad Ireland supporter, and she was at the game in Durban, I think it was. She said, the South African fans are really bad sports. They were really bad losers, and the team as well. I don't know. I didn't see the game. I just saw the highlight
of it.
You know what? What happened?
They were completely outplayed and outwitted.
Hmm.
They came in, thought they were going to run over Ireland, and Ireland had a new game plan which worked incredibly well. And again, I'm not, I don't want to classify myself as an expert, but what they scored, the Springboks scored 8 penalties.
Mm.
And what happens, they play for a penalty. Do you know what I mean? Because the rules are so intricate and so difficult to understand, especially the scrummage rules, you know. So they win penalties. Why? Because they've got Oxnish, whatever his name is there, who is a monster of a man and a great prop. Mm. And he kills the opposition, which gives him a penalty, which they slot over. So they're not running for the try line. You know what I mean? They're not trying to play. They play that kind of game, which gives them the points. And I was saying, you know, that was starting to annoy me to say. And I could see the Irish got a little tired and gave away a few penalties and that. But overall, they were by far the superior team, Ireland.
Mm.
And I think it was justification that they won the game, and with two brilliant drop kicks.
Mm.
But I agree with you; they don't like, and you hear it in the commentators as well. You know, they'll always find some reason, blame the ref, blame this person. You know, if Billy did, you know, Billy hadn't gone off in the first second and banged his head. You know, all those, well, it happens on both sides. But you're right. I just I looked at it objectively. They were great, and the English as well. They were, except the All Blacks. All Blacks are good sports. You know what?
Mm.
I like the All Black team. They play with a lovely attitude, whether they win or lose. And England were pretty close, Lindsay. Pretty close.
Anyway,
and this is down at Dunedin, eh? Anyway,
it's good. No, it's good. They acquitted themselves very well. Sad to see the West Indies cricket team being on such a low at the moment, losing by an innings and 120 runs or something to England. Because I think the Test cricket world is a poorer place without a good West Indies team.
Because
you know, the days of Viv Richards and Clive Lloyd and people like that, they were incredible. And Michael Holding. They used to call him Whispering Death because you couldn't hear him coming. The umpire would say, as he came into bowl, he didn't know he was there because he was so silent. He was brilliant. So we've got all that going on. Strange to see how the English crowd, the Wimbledon crowd, should I call it, not just English, can't stand Djokovic. What is it about him that is so dislikable? What is that?
He spoke beautifully. He actually, after the game, he really spoke beautifully. He was articulate. You know, poor old Gonzalez can't, you know, he's got, he can't speak English that well. He gets through it. But Djokovic was fluent.
Yes.
And really spoke, you know, with his heart. And he was very, you know, he wasn't hurt. He wasn't upset. He was very, complimentary.
Yes.
And as one of the lady who was interviewing said, you know, you've been in, I think, 8 consecutive finals. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
But they don't like him.
I don't know if it's the way he looks or where he comes from, which is a country that has a bad reputation in Europe. But, yeah, I don't know.
Remember, he wouldn't be vaccinated. He wouldn't.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
He wasn't. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't mind him. I find him, he's not Federer and he's not Nadal, but he's okay. You can't take anything away from his sportsmanship. I mean, he's a remarkable player.
He's statistically the best player there's ever been. But would you want to watch Federer or him? I think I'd watch Federer every day of the week.
Federer was a gentleman. Mm. No, Federer was he's one of the gentlemen of sports. Mm. You know, you don't find people who've reached his level, you know, with that much humility. He's an absolute gentleman.
All right, talking about gentlemen. I really wish Gareth Southgate well, but he's got to go now. He has to go. If you took that group of players, I mean, you just think you've got from Stones in the middle, who's a great attacking defender, and he's elegant. Yeah. He's like an English Rodri in many ways, not as good, but the same sort of player. You've got Foden, you've got Bellingham, you've got all these very talented kids. And they're doing very well for their teams, and they come to England, and they just look like a sort of disparate bunch of misfits. They blagged their way into the final. They were very, very lucky to beat the Netherlands. It wasn't a penalty. Harry Kane's too old, and Gareth Southgate seems almost indignant. He says, "Why do people have a go at me?" I tell you why they have a go at you, because the football that you play is boring. And you've never won anything, so you've done a good job to get us where we are, but now move on. Let's get someone like Pep in or Ancelotti in or someone like that.
They have to do it. And I agree. You know, when I actually looked at the team, you know, and I mean, Kyle Walker was superb.
Yes.
Honestly, I think just generally most people played well, but they just never came together. Mm. Luke Shaw... great. You know,
he was so good in that first half against Yamin Lamal. He snuffed him out beautifully.
Totally. Mm. So I thought it was going to be Trippier. That's what I said to you on Thursday. I said, you know, he's not going to get past this little 16-year-old, 17-year-old. And Shaw was brilliant. He was really – and I can't fault, you know. I think Foden disappointed. Foden just never came alive in the whole tournament. Never saw him anywhere close to what he does for Man City.
Because of Pep, you see. It's Pep.
And Kane, yeah. That's and Kane right. was nowhere. Kane shouldn't have been on the field. Yeah, you know, seriously.
Right. No, I agree
You've got
with
Tony,
you.
You've got anyway.
Yeah, Ivan Tony should have started.
When does the season start? Soon.
Well, I'm no expert, but August the 17th.
Okay.
Actually, the first game is August the 16th, a Friday night. It's Man United Wolves or something.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so we've still got 4 weeks to go, David.
That's all right.
Yeah, okay. Ipswich Liverpool is the first game on Saturday lunchtime.
I know.
Terrifying.
Where are you playing? Is it?
It's Ipswich Liverpool at Portman Road, and then the game after that, the following week, it's Man City Ipswich. So they haven't exactly got the easiest start to the season. You can laugh as much as you like.
Fire,
I'll be in tatters anyway. Arsenal, I was looking at the Arsenal website the other day and you haven't made a signing. And Arteta says it's very, very difficult to find someone at the right price at the moment. They haven't signed anybody.
Oi. That's bad. They need someone up front.
They do. They need a striker. Yeah, but they can't find them. There's so much competition for them. Anyway, David, thank you very much for your time. We'll have a chat with Viv on Thursday about less important matters like AI and things like that. David Shapiro is from Sesame Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.